Hi, Bob. I was just, as I was saying to you, trying to move my motorized desk into my most flattering camera angle. Because getting a little high, especially for a female, I think.
And how's that working for you?
It's great.
I would think high is better than low, right?
So you can get low. And, I mean, I can
high,
sit down.
What's wrong with high? Top of the head is good.
High is good, and I put a little high when I'm reading to get my laptop screen high. And then when I type, I put a little lower. And I just do different angles. Anyway, I highly recommend a motorized...
And does it go to full standing position, your motorized desk?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it goes above standing. Look, I'm standing up right now, and you can see how much higher...
So you can, like, jump and you can jump and write at the same time?
Yeah, I can do this. But, I am standing up. I'm not this short. I'm standing up, and this is... Even a tall person, I know you're tall. People don't realize when they just see your head that you're very tall.
I'm not that tall, but we've had this argument anyway.
I know, but I'm helping you publicize your height since you don't get this information out effectively enough by being a talking head. You know, everybody's equal in the world of heads. And those of you who have height over the rest of us, you don't really get to get your dominance projected out through the head screen well enough. So I'm just helping.
That's probably what held me back. That's probably what
held
me back.
Well, I saw your TED Talk, and when in TED Talk they do the whole full body thing, and it's
right. And I was just I was totally dominant.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
Yeah. So enough about us, Anne. You wanted to talk guns. I want to talk guns.
Yeah, let's
talk
about guns.
Who doesn't like guns?
I hear you're intimidated by the 3D printout plastic gun.
By the what?
By the 3D printed out plastic gun.
Oh, the 3D plastic gun. Well, you know, I was more, in terms of being freaked out, I mean, we'll get to that, but I was more freaked out by that 5-year-old who killed his 2-year-old sister with a rifle that's a 22 rifle that is really marketed, aimed at kids roughly his age. I mean, there's an actual video ad I've seen. It's called My First Rifle.
And it's not just a trick to freak out liberals. It's a real thing, My First Rifle.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
but it did
kind
work
of a relatively short rifle, not that long, but it's a .22.
Okay, now
it's
if you
rifle.
Had to say there is a good reason for this product to exist, what would you say?
To drive liberals completely crazy.
But in addition
and
to that...
it's working for me, I mean...
At what age, in families where people live, let's say, in a rural environment and where hunting is a tradition, at what age do you think a father might take his son or daughter out to get a little early experience shooting varmints,
I actually have data on that. Okay. Here's the data. My parents were both from rural backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Then my father joined the Army, so we weren't brought up in a rural background. Mm-hmm. But when my brother was like 13 or 14, my father bought him a .22 rifle. Mm-hmm. And we used to go out in the desert and shoot it. I was like 8 or 9. Well, and at that age, my father got me a BB gun for my birthday.
BB is,
that all seems about right to me, you know.
Wait, how old were you again? 5?
Well, when I got my BB gun, I was 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. But I would go out in the desert with my brother, and under his supervision, I would shoot. I mean, it was almost like an informal range setting where it was very carefully set up, and he took a model of a Jaguar that he was through with, and we shot it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, my father trusted him to oversee me, but he should have. I mean, in those days in Texas, my brother had a driver's license at 14. You know, he was,
different parts of the country are different, and shooting varmints is... something that kids are taught to do at an earlier age than you might think. I mean, what age do you trust kids cooking and boiling water? When, in fact, some kids get killed pulling a pot of boiling water off the stove. And what age do you teach a child to swim versus kids are drowning in pools all the time?
Yeah.
You know, these are accidents that have to do with a failure of parental supervision. There's so many things that you might have in the house that could kill a little kid. And a gun is one of them. So the thing about a gun, it seems to me, is that you know it's a dangerous thing, and the parents who buy them are usually very focused on training the child to use it properly, all of these safety rules. There's so many other items, like swimming pools, that maybe people don't immediately, or bathtubs, or cooking on the stove, that people aren't hyper alert about how this requires safety training and supervision.
Right.
Whereas I would think with a gun, although there are negligent parents around about all manner of things,
I mean, look.
So I don't see why this is really a particular problem. You know, with a gun, you have to take these precautions. If you're such a negligent parent that you're not doing that with this item, then, you know, you're down there around negligent parents who really, it's a wonder their kids survive.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, you know, giving a gun to a five-year-old and doing so in a responsible manner. I mean, obviously, this set of parents, one of them or both, mm-hmm. were just not
right.
responsible. I mean, first of all, not just that somebody had left a loaded gun there, but the first thing you tell, I think, anyone mm-hmm. with proper gun training is, in some sense, you always treat a gun as if it were loaded.
Of course, yes.
You never point an empty gun at someone. And if a five-year-old is not someone you would tell that to, who the hell is? I mean, this is seriously negligent parenting. I'm sorry. I know it's a tragedy, and they're in mourning, and it's a horrible loss for them.
They don't need to hear that they made a mistake. I think. Have you ever?
No, I'm not going to tell them that.
Now, I know you have at least one child. Have you ever come close to your child doing something that could have killed her, and you know that you should have intervened, you should have done something different, and you lucked out that time, but, you know, you might not have been lucky. A lot of people have lost children because some horrible thing happened, like in a swimming pool. You know, drowning in a swimming pool is much more common than getting shot. We hear about a person getting shot because it's a lively political issue where the political parties are on two different sides and nobody's really anti-swimming pool. Or cleaning fluids in the house or cooking, you know, but accidents happen and people need to be alert about that. I think the fact that some accidents happen with guns shouldn't be given a different treatment than it deserves. I know it seems ludicrous to people in the city or people who don't like guns or who are afraid of guns to think that there's something marketed as my first gun. But in fact,
the ad is kind of, it does kind of freak you out. Have you seen the video ad for my first drive? It was on Slate. It's like, at first it shows a kid saying, gee, I wish I had a gun like Billy's or whatever, and it's supposed to, like, guilt out the father. And then it shows the kid going, oh, now I do have one. I mean, the kid is really about seven.
Yeah.
And it's just a really strange thing to see. And, look, again, I can imagine a parent doing this responsibly. And I'm not saying there should be a law, but I don't know. It does kind of creep me out that there's this .22 rifle being literally marketed to seven-year-olds.
Right.
I'm sorry. I guess that means I'm a liberal.
Can you buy it just on the shelf, or is it?
I'm sure you have to be an adult to buy the damn thing.
So
in any event,
unlike the birth control pills or the morning after pills, it is something that you would have to. An adult would have to be an intermediary. A kid can't just go buy it.
Sure, it's just that it's like a child-size gun.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in, like, pink and stuff
I'm going to make a feminist point on that, Greg. If they come in pink, let's say you might want to get your daughter involved in some gender, not the typical, you want the girl to use, maybe get involved in some sports, some boy things, and marketing mm-hmm. some products in pink so she wouldn't just say, oh, that's for boys, if you had a girl like that. Look, here's girl
pink
gun.
Is fine.
One of the points in
you're
favor.
Right. I'm cool with a pink gun.
Yeah, so get it. And also for adult women as well, I think one of the gun control issues that came out in the Supreme Court case about the Second Amendment is that it's something that can be empowering for women and women feeling mm-hmm. free to use guns to defend themselves. It is an equalizer. It is something that can make a lot of women live alone now, make women feel safe alone, make women able to go out hiking in the woods. Like, I used to be afraid walking in the woods. I'm just afraid somebody might hurt me. Mm-hmm. Not that anybody ever did, but, you know, maybe I should conceal carry. They have these little under bra holsters, you know, and they don't show.
Okay. I encourage you to get one in.
How do you know I don't have one on right now, Bob?
I have to admit to having no knowledge about that at all.
I'm just saying, I think it is a feminist issue. I think there's also a racial issue of people who, it's something brought out in the Supreme Court case that people who are at risk, who are threatened by other people, might want to arm themselves so that they can, especially if they're outnumbered.
Well, now we can all print our guns at home, so there's no worries. And
it freaks me out that 3D objects can be printed. I think that's
Does that freak you out?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we all saw that, right? Now you can, I mean, you do actually have to add one little metal part, like a little firing pin, like a nail thing, but basically, in principle, you can print your own gun.
And the fact is, if you didn't have guns, you know, the Boston bombing was done with pressure cookers and what, like nails and shards of whatever. We're reading about these poor girls in Cleveland who were trapped in the basement. I haven't heard about guns being instrumental in that. The fact is that there are lots of different ways of hurting other people and hurting yourself. I think a lot of this stuff about guns, when you read the statistics on death, the statistics are way puffed up by suicide statistics. You know, like two-thirds of the deaths you're reading about are suicide, not somebody killing somebody else, but people killing themselves. And if you take away people's guns, they'll just kill themselves a different way.
Now, are you so you're like against gun control?
I'm in favor of being smart and relying on the actual statistics.
That's a very courageous position you're taking there.
I think that...
I'm a champion of stupidity, and I'm not moving from that position no matter what you say.
I think there's a lot of stupidity around... Not stupidity. It's not, in terms of legislation, stupid. It's smart. It's smart politically. As a way to do legislation for the good of the people, I think it's stupid. It's importing emotions around political leverage, wedge issues... to show that you're doing something about a problem. I don't think it's effective. I think they put these laws in that make good people then have to be, who are punctilious, go to a lot of trouble that other people are just bypassing. And meanwhile, the laws aren't even enforced anyway. So I don't like this gesturing, this lawmaking for the point of gesturing. I don't like these wedge issues being used in politics rather than getting at what the real issues are that we then can conveniently avoid. I think we're in a very distinctive period now in American politics where the wedge issues are all being brought out and we're all being manipulated and softened and shaped to be good, appropriate voters in 2014 especially, but also 2016. And I think it's ludicrous, and I think that we ought to try to be smarter and only want laws that are actually valuable.
You know
not
what you're telling
me,
Anne?
Something about guns because the children.
You know what I just realized about you, Anne? Now, having reflected on the fact that what you just said was an answer to the question I asked about whether you were for or against gun control, I realized you really don't like to take positions on actual policy questions.
Because I'm not an expert. I don't like to take positions as if I'm an expert, and I don't take positions out of ideology. I'm not an ideologue. And I'm not an expert. I support science. I would like to defer to the experts. I would like to think that they were in government, but I don't trust the people in government to rely appropriately on expertise.
Trust me, Anne. Put all of your trust in Bob.
Bobism.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is this why you have such a large and enthusiastic following on your blog, is that you don't alienate any of them by actually taking positions?
Well, I alienate lefties by not being ideological, but there's a certain contingency of moderates and right-wingers who, especially because they think I'm a liberal, that I allow them to, you know, use the comments as their playground, whereas lefties are not comfortable in that environment. That's a difference between righties and lefties that I've observed. And being
What's the difference again? What's the difference?
I think I'm a political moderate, and I'm not an ideologue, and I like to open up questions and look at all sides, and I'm not interested in persuading people about things, and I wish there were experts who could figure things out and solve problems, but I don't really trust anyone. So that's kind of my mindset. And I found in putting up these posts over the years on lots of whatever topic is interesting to me and kind of setting up discussions that the comments section has over time accumulated just a large proportion of right-wingers who seem to enjoy being able to speak in my place and not be rejected, have a chance to speak, especially since they perceive me as liberal. So then they can come in and tell me I'm stupid.
They think they're being heterodox. So it's not like just them going on what they see as a right-wing site and joining the choir.
Right.
They think that they're being, like, courageous or something.
But lefties... And liberals look at me, and because I'm not liberal on every issue, they just shun me, exclude me as a right-winger. And then they want to go somewhere else and say that I'm an idiot, I'm a drunkard, I'm an old hag who is on the edge of the grave, or whatever they say. I've been called an
albino. And you deny all those things flatly and without reservation.
I deny what things. I'm saying that this is the pattern.
Drunkard.
Yeah, I'm not a drunkard.
I think the first one was stupid.
Well, I think I'm obviously not stupid, or I wouldn't have been able to get this far. I'm not. I don't like to act professorial and kind of show off an intellectual style of speech, which I kind of make fun of when other people do. So I sometimes put things in a comic way, and I use concision a lot, and I use questions a lot. So I don't say things I don't know, but I'll put things in a certain way that it enables people who like to push back others this way to call me stupid. I know I'm not stupid, so it doesn't bother me. I think it's stupid, but, I'm not a drunkard, and I am old. I am 62 years old. So
that's not old. 62 is the new 61.5, man. Don't worry.
But the reason I say I'm old is that the truth is, I think it's kind of youthful to just say old instead of being all, oh no, I'm still young and all this stuff. So I think it's hipper and cooler, and
it's cooler to, yes,
more youthful to just say I'm old.
That's my approach.
Yeah, it's a little trick. Yeah.
Candor. There's no surer sign of youth than candor.
Right. Also, it's...
I'm old.
Yeah.
I mean, and that means I'm young, that I said that.
Right, and also it's claiming a certain amount of experience. So, you know, I have seen many eras of politics and history and so on. I have a lot of stuff to draw on, and I use that.
Right. I have the wisdom to fall back on as the actual rate of synaptic firing drops inexorably. I've got that, the wisdom.
Yeah. Also, I think, I like being old. I think you have less to lose. So you have lower stakes overall,
you know,
and you can be a lot freer. And you should use, people should use that
right.
freedom. So that's what
there
I think.
There is this golden moment in your life when you have quit caring what people think of you, and yet your body has not yet started to fall apart.
Right. As long as you're not
that's
in
where you
want to
be.
Right.
Unfortunately, it lasts about 3 days.
Oh, that isn't true. I think it lasts a long time.
Depends on your robustness.
Well, your body can go to hell when you're 5 years old. I mean, a lot of that's a matter of luck. Especially if your
sister
shoots you.
I've got nagging tennis elbow, and that's just one example. And I don't even play tennis, and I've got tennis elbow.
Well,
what kind of justice is that?
Well,
if there was really an omnipotent and benevolent God, would I have tennis elbow, Ann? I ask you.
But yeah, you have the perfect excuse for not playing tennis.
I've never needed one in the past, but you're right. I have one now. Unfortunately, it's also an excuse for not doing things I actually want to do. But I digress. Enough about me. I prefer talking... I like this Ann-on-Ann theme that has been emerging in our conversation, and I think we should go with that. On being Ann.
All right. Well, you'll have to interview me then. I don't know what you want to know.
I've been interviewing you, and I think I've been doing a pretty good job.
Well, I've been wanting to say that gun crime has plunged in the United States since its peak in the middle of the 1990s, according to two recent studies of government data in an article in the LA Times today.
But people don't know that.
In less than two decades, the gun murder rate has been cut nearly in half. And yet people, unless very few people believe that that's true, if you ask them whether gun murder has gone up or down, this is what I mean about stupidity. I mean, and political manipulation. People are made to think, oh, no, there's some upward spiral in violence in this country. And the opposite
right.
is true. People don't know what's true, and they're forming their politics around completely false beliefs. Doesn't that bother
but there
you?
Is a certain type of gun killing that I really think just basically almost didn't happen before my early youth that is what freaks people out. You know, the Adam Lanza type thing. I mean, when I was young, I remember the University of Texas tower shooting.
Yep.
You remember that?
Sure. Charles Whitman.
That was like almost the first of its kind ever. You know, that was one of these crazy mass killings. And I don't know what comes before that. I don't know how far back you have to go, but that was like in the early or mid-60s. I don't know how far back you have to go to find something before that. But it does seem, I don't know what exactly the stat, I know there's some stat that claims that even mass killings haven't grown much over the last few decades.
Maybe the publicizing, making the person into a celebrity.
I don't know, but come on, I mean, the Aurora shooting...
Mm-hmm.
The Adam Lanza, Sikh Temple, all those are within like the last year and a half, and it just was not happening at that rate when I was a kid. I'm sorry. It was not.
Well,
I
question the way it's covered, And I think that they, I mean, look at this Boston bombing, the pictures of those two brothers. Aren't they cute? All the girls love
them. I'll leave that to you.
I'm just voicing the reaction that the repeated use of those pictures is intended to produce, especially in women. I think that the idea that, oh, look, they're nice. Look, unlike Adam Lanza, who looked like a freak, as did Lochner and Holmes, the Aurora shooter. Now they've got really hot-looking young men and the women who love them in Boston. Didn't you think
that... You think this maybe is a trend in terrorism?
Well, I think maybe if you look good and are popular with the girls, I would think that that would tend to reduce your instinct toward mass murder. But I don't think that the Boston bombers were like those other people. I think those other people were crazy. And looked crazy. I think that they looked like what they were, and somebody ought to have helped them before they went off the rails, that it's a mental illness problem. I don't know. I think it's a mental illness problem.
Yeah, these guys were not classically mentally ill. They were alienated, especially the older brother. I think, you know,
right.
The
I don't
older
think
brother
those...
had like a violent streak to begin with. He was alienated, and the more alienated he got, the more attractive he found the kind of jihadist narrative.
It's a little bit like the people with the Che T-shirts and the weathermen, the Weather Underground.
Well, come on.
The
romance
of the, left.
There's a big difference between wearing a Che T-shirt and actually doing something.
Right. Most people don't do that. But I think that there's a romanticism of a certain kind of a rebel against society that has been going on in America for a long time. Certain young people in my generation, when we were young, fell into. That's what the Weather Underground was about, the idea that, violent, imagery was actually righteous and good.
Well, they actually planted a bomb, Weather Underground.
They made bombs,
So do you think we make too big a deal of terrorism? I mean, because, you could, what you said about gun shooting, gun violence... It's actually at relatively low levels. You could make the same point about, over the last 10 years, the number of Americans who have died or been maimed, by terrorism is like, it's a less likely fate than everything else you can think of, drowning in a bathtub.
And being shot in school.
So, do you think we're making too big a deal of terrorism? Do you think we freaked out too much over the Boston
bombing? I can remember thinking just on 9/11, the original 9/11, 2001, that making this worldwide figure out of Bin Laden and creating, having the whole country change and adjust, and everybody's minds have now been turned around by this character and his vision and this, this thing that was done. I think that, I think it was important to fight it. I think some good decisions were made there, maybe. But I think that you also, by recognizing a group as the enemy of the United States, some group rather than diminishing it and crushing it in some other way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Again, I would defer to experts. I don't know what the best way to solve terrorism is. But
I think we freak out way too much.
You give them energy in part by acknowledging them as an enemy on a military level.
You absolutely do. And for that matter, the Lochner, all these guys, I think whenever you plaster their faces all over every website and newspaper, you make emulating them more attractive to people like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not calling for a law against it, but I think it would be great if a bunch of high-powered news sites agreed to exercise some degree of restraint in that regard.
Well, maybe that's why we didn't hear so much about it before Charles Whitman at the University of Texas back, when was that, in the 60s?
I don't know.
Maybe there was some ethics about not putting their picture out there, not naming them, but we've certainly made them, even some terrible murderers, end up becoming kind of famous enough that it's a reward to them.
It turned out that he had some kind of actual brain tumor messed him up.
Right.
But so what else were we? Okay, so we've talked.
We were going to talk about you. You said that Chris Christie. You brought up Chris Christie's issue with the
Stomach stapling thing. I haven't seen a before and after picture though. Have you?
They said he's lost 40 pounds, but he's so overweight.
He has a long way to go.
So.
Big man.
But people are saying this means he's running for president, and then that brings up the issue of whether a fact a person could be president today. When's the last, I mean, Clinton was a little chubby, Bill Clinton.
Oh, but Clinton was nothing compared to, you know, I mean, Clinton wasn't
since
really.
Since the days of TV, have we had a fat president?
Right.
Have we had a bald president?
We have not had even a remotely, have we since TV, a remotely overweight president? Really? I mean, Clinton is maybe the heaviest, and that's nothing.
And we haven't had a bald president since, Eisenhower.
And he was a war hero.
He was a war hero.
He also had kind of a squeaky voice, you know.
So he would kind of predated TV, though, I think. Did people
really
have
totally.
TVs
he was
when
a,
he first came in? Yeah.
Yeah, when he was most Americans did not have TVs when he was elected president.
And people talked differently back then. You know, sometimes I go back to this old audio of Franklin Roosevelt, and I can't believe that. You know, he has.
Well, that's that patrician, that ridiculous patrician accent.
A politician talking today in the tone that Franklin Roosevelt took. And, it, you know, you hear about his fireside chats like they were folksy, but if you listen to them, he sounds like someone impersonating a rich guy trying to seem like, a supercilious, we are the 1% kind of a person.
He sounds like Daddy Warbucks or something.
Yeah. So, TV has changed us in that regard. And I think, one thing I think about Christie is that he went on the Barbara Walters show and talked about how he if he could fix it, he would. She asked him, you're grotesquely overweight, I'm paraphrasing. And she said, why?
She actually said grotesquely. Yeah.
But why? Sorry. That was her question. And he said, if I knew why, I would fix it. And, so that's the emotional appeal to the demographic that includes a lot of women. And then he went on Letterman. I think that was about a month before he got the surgery. He goes on Letterman, and he does some comic business where he pulls out a cupcake or donuts and starts eating them. And that was supposed to be very funny when Letterman asked him about his weight. And I think that he was testing to see if he could be the jolly fat man who was fat accepting and that people would embrace that and think it was cool. Maybe that's a new way to be cool. Maybe he could rock the fat.
But if that was the test,
but he did not get a good enough reaction to that. And I think that that's when they polled it internally and said, this won't work. And he was quoted, I think, some
is
this donor.
But this is sheer conjecture on your part. You don't know that they actually polled it internally?
I'm guessing that they polled it internally after the Letterman. First came the Walters, then the Letterman. I think they polled it internally, and this had to be shown to the donors. I think the donors wanted to see this. The donors might even want to know whether you're going to drop dead of a heart attack. Right? I'm going to give you all this money, and you're not even taking care of your health. Will you be able to stand up to the stresses of the road, or will you poop out, fat man? So I think his people did the polling, because he has to prove it to the donors. I think he's running, and I think that the only way to do it was with the surgery, and then he got the surgery.
You don't think there's anything wrong with this, do you?
I think there is something very wrong with getting the surgery, but I think there are some...
You're against the stomach surgery?
Yeah, have you read about it? Do you know what it is? Do you understand what's going on? You only lose weight because you eat less, you realize. You could just eat less. But the thing is, you don't have the willpower to eat less.
Right.
All right, and I understand.
So this way you get the feeling of being full sooner and you stop eating sooner, right?
Right. How about just...
So what's wrong with that?
First of all, you're spending $50,000 or whatever you're spending to... I don't know what it costs, but to have a doctor. So we have limited resources in terms of medical facilities, doctors, and so on, and we're using them to do surgery on people so that they will eat less, when in fact eating less without the surgery would produce the same loss of weight. Now, I know people can't lose weight, and it's a huge problem, and there's no solution, but I have a problem with using surgical resources. Also, there are complications. Sometimes people die. Who's spending the money on that?
Well, okay, but that's
and
their
I'm
call.
Also
it's,
concerned.
Their, it's their risk to take. I mean, you as a kind of a libertarian shouldn't be complaining that people...
If it's your own money. Yeah.
Choose a risk. Okay,
okay,
so
but
that's
I'm,
what
I'm
I want to get clear on. Are you saying that even if they use their own money, you're against this, or you're just against it if they drive up health care costs for the rest of us?
I'm concerned. First of all, I think that there's a limited number of doctors, so I don't like seeing our medical education facilities being used
to crank out people who are doing this surgery. But that's a short-term problem. I mean, if people choose to spend money on this, their own money,
like
then more doctors
surgery.
Will get in the business, and it won't, like, create some kind of long-term
so
scarcity,
do you
I don't
think. That medical resources should be allocated based on who has the money and is willing to spend their own money for this, or do you think that medicine is kind of a different sort of a... market and should be run in a different
way. Well, wait. First of all, you're kind of saying that this isn't medicine, right? So I'm not sure which... Are you asking me whether I think this should be included in insurance, or am I in favor of insurance?
I think it's marginal. I think it's medical, but I think it's more like a plastic surgery.
Okay,
it's
so you're
marginal.
Saying this should be considered cosmetic.
I wouldn't ban it, but... What I'm concerned with is that you're going to develop all of these interests. Doctors who do the surgery, facilities built to do the surgery. And then there are a lot of fat people who are going to be saying, I want it too. Doctors who would like to answer their, who have lots of overweight patients who don't know how to lose the weight, who they tell them to go on a diet, here's your diet, but they can't, it doesn't work, right? Or gain it right back. So the doctor could say, here, I'll recommend you for the surgery. The just like with the kids with the ADD, here's a prescription. So people want something specific that will have the appearance of actually working. And then I think that once that starts to happen and the rich people buy it, there's an awful lot of poor or middle class people who won't be able to pay their own for their own surgery, who are going to want it too, and we're all going to be paying everybody else's medical care.
Well,
pretty soon.
I will say,
and
I mean,
so
maybe
we're
going
to be
approaching...
asked to pay for that. We are going to be paying for it. Of course, we're going to be paying for it. So
I'd
like to see it discouraged.
I don't think it should be discouraged. I mean, I think if anybody wants to pay for it, they should. But what I would say is, in general, I am sympathetic to the idea that in the name of making health care affordable to more people via, you know, government program, Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid, whatever, I am in favor of what, you know, in the extreme case, people refer to as rationing. In other words, just making some decisions about certain procedures that cannot be part of that program, because if they were, you wouldn't be able to afford the program. I mean, I do think choices like that have
but
to be
don't
made.
Don't you think that's going to be political? And when you have something like overweight,
yeah,
which
political.
Is so widely shared. I mean, I think the resources are going to go. This is what I'm afraid of with government health care, is that the resources will go toward the things that a lot of people have and a lot of people feel strongly about. As we saw the last election, birth control was a huge issue. And I think this is going to be like that, too. There's so many overweight people, and the argument will be made. It'll be made that diabetes and this and that are all more expensive, so we need to control this problem at the obesity level. Lots of groundwork has been laid for that. And then there's so many obese and overweight people that they're going to say,
this could be available
to me. I want it free. If I want to do it,
it
should be free, because otherwise I'll cost the system so much more. There are going to be so many millions of people who will be interested in that argument.
Many policy arguments, it's a tough one. It also could be, with many of these things, when they're first available, they're very expensive, and then they get cheaper. And maybe the solution is to say, well, for the first few years, we can't bring this into the government insurance program, but as it becomes cheaper and more routine, we can.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're hard decisions. But anyway, let me be clear. Leaving aside the insurance and government insurance question, you kind of disapprove of people doing this, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, one thing about Christie, which I think came out in particular in the Barbara Walters interview, is that, you know, he's offering himself as somebody who can fix our problems. He even made fix it kind of a slogan for himself. But then in one situation, about the sequester, about the budget, you need to just solve the problem and fix it. You know, he's got this kind of Ross Perot quality that, let me in there and I'll fix it. But then he said to Barbara Walters, if I knew how to fix it, I would. So he doesn't know how to fix his own immediate personal problem that's hurting
him. But aren't those two different realms? I mean, can't you intellectually come up with the appropriate solution for a public policy problem and yet in some sense lack self-control? Maybe you're a cigarette smoker, maybe you're whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't that possible?
Yes, it is, but you need to convince the people to vote for you. So in terms of running for office, I think that he discovered that it wouldn't work to be that fat. That would be used against him.
Yeah.
And also the dollars were using it against him. But I think if you use surgery as the way to fix it, I think that it doesn't demonstrate character and discipline the way actually losing weight, keeping yourself fit does. First of all, he's somebody that let himself get that out of shape. He took the most valuable thing that you have, your own body. he just let it go to hell. So that doesn't seem trustworthy. That seems to be a character
problem. And isn't there any realm in which you find self-control really difficult?
Yeah, but I'm not offering myself as a potential president. Most people I'm the most trustworthy person in the country. If you're running for president, you're making a special claim to higher level discipline, intelligence, judgment, problem-solving ability. So I think to run for president and to look like that is an incoherency that people would notice, and it would be huge.
I don't think you're claiming to be without flaw, though.
I'm not running for president. Why is it about me? I'm not running for president.
No, I mean, when you're running for president, to run for president is not to claim to be flawless.
Right.
It's to claim to lack flaws in relevant areas.
It's a claim to have good character, to be extremely trustworthy,
in the sense that where examples need to be set, I don't think it's good for it to come out that a president has been fooling around with an intern, for example.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to set good examples. I guess I'm not sure whether this would be an example of, maybe you're right. Maybe.
But look at Newt Gingrich. Don't you think if Newt Gingrich had a clean personal record with his marriage, if he'd have stayed married to his first wife and they had a solid marriage, he never heard anything bad about any kind of sexual misdoings, and he had never gotten fat, if he were slim, he would be nice looking. He would have with his mind, his ability to speak, I think he would have been president. But with those two things going against him, he wasn't even a credible candidate.
But you're saying that's appropriate. He should be politically punished for these things.
Well, maybe we lose out on some people who are good because we judge too harshly in that dimension. But I think he wasn't a good candidate, and the Republicans were good to pass him up.
Yeah.
Although I think in that second debate where Mitt Romney lost it by being a little too timid in the Candy Crowley interview with I've got the transcript of that interview. I think if Newt Gingrich had been in that debate, that he would have stood his ground. And I think Romney is kind of a little bit of a sweetheart who was a little bit like, oh, am I wrong? I think we'd had a little more of an attack dog at that point.
I think Gingrich is wilier than Romney, yes.
Maybe stuff like that connects with overeating and cheating on your wife. You know, these character issues are clusters. Most of us don't have what it takes.
Well, wiliness helps. Wiliness helps if you're going to cheat on your wife, I assume.
Right, and you have to be kind of a special sort of a person to even think you could run for president and have the nerve to do all the things you need to do. Probably no one who's truly good would ever get into that category.
No, increasingly. So what else? We wanted to talk about
fat issue to the over-the-counter, any age can buy it issue of the morning after pill.
Because you're afraid that that too will be covered by health insurance?
No,
cheap, isn't it?
I think that making it available as something you buy in the drugstore, like you could buy shampoo, is a way of saying, oh yeah, we will. Your birth control needs to be covered by insurance. That's a lot of people tapping into their insurance for birth control. But if it's just a product you buy in the store, along with your tampons and things like that. That will be a huge savings to the program. So I think that there'll be a tendency to do things to make them cheap, even as things like stomach surgery are going to be demanded and will be hard to say no to. I also think making marijuana legal is going to go along with that. This idea that all these people whining about their moods and their aches and pains, I think if once marijuana is legal, just let people grow their own marijuana, and maybe they won't go to the doctor.
Well, think that'll solve all that'll solve all their aches and pains?
If
not,
they'll
just be too busy sleeping to complain about them.
Either it will solve their aches and pains, or they won't particularly care, or they just won't be motivated enough to make a doctor's appointment and drag themselves over there. So that'll save us some money, don't you think?
That's an excellent idea. Legalize marijuana as a way to save on health care costs because slackers don't make doctor's appointments. And I think you really should run for office, because that is a platform I would support.
Okay. Maybe I should start a Kickstarter. Oh, I wouldn't want to raise money to run for office because I just think there's so many crimes. Speaking of regulation and then how mm-hmm. punctilious people don't want to do things, like go into business or all the campaign finance law. There's too many crimes there. I'm too afraid of doing something wrong. I wouldn't want to
okay.
go into that.
Maybe you should stay in the provocateur business.
I'm totally in the provocateur zone. Plus, as I said, I'm old, so, you know, I have little to gain by trying
to
achieve
something. You
have few
cares.
What?
You have few cares in life, mm-hmm. and you don't care what they think of you.
That's right. I can just take pot shots from my remote outpost in Madison, Wisconsin.
In rural Wisconsin. Where you have your My First Rifle in your purse. Wait, what else? Wasn't there a whole cluster of issues you wanted to?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
I mean, you outlined, I mean, it was all the way from the Cleveland kidnappings to Jason Collins, and I forget what the segues were going to be.
We were going to talk about Jason Collins and Howard
yeah,
Kurtz.
Yeah, and Howie Kurtz.
Yeah, yeah. What do you
now, think? I thought, you know, from the beginning, I'm sorry, and this Howie Kurtz thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not like a huge Howie Kurtz fan. He had me on his radio show back when nobody had heard of him, and he was mm-hmm. he was a little known reporter on the Washington Post, and I lived in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I've had very little interaction with him, but it did seem to me when this thing first started bubbling. Well, it didn't bubble up; it burst mm-hmm. on the scene. About he's of course the media reporter for CNN and the Daily Beast, and suddenly he was leaving the Daily Beast amid supposed scandal. And my first suspicion was, I just think Tina Brown overpaid for a lot of talent several years ago when she mm-hmm. didn't understand the economics of the web.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since, she's been finding ways to dump these people. And I think she had been building up a dossier on this guy, and mm-hmm. she saw her moment and is just trying to dump him.
And,
I mean,
you know,
I'm not saying he didn't make these mistakes
yeah.
or that his comments about Jason Collins weren't insensitive. It just seems to me a little convenient.
Well, if you want to fire somebody, and then you're going to pick your time when you're going to look best, giving the guy the boot. You lured him out of the Washington Post and onto the Daily Beast, and now you want to get rid of him because he's not doing that well, or he's not spending as much time on it as you want, or whatever it is. But then why not take advantage of the opportunity that makes you look good? Oh, you're outraged that he would criticize.
Right.
But the truth is, there was a basis for criticizing Jason Collins over this issue of deceiving the woman that he was engaged to, apparently, for 8 years. I have a huge problem
wait.
With someone doing that, but he
wait,
didn't
wait,
get
wait,
the
wait,
facts
wait. You're
going
right. to have to catch it. Wait, Anne. You're ahead of me because I don't. The only thing I know about the story is that Howie Kurtz said in his piece that Jason Collins, in his disclosure, had withheld
right.
the fact that
right.
he had a
so,
heterosexual
yeah.
relationship or something
right.
like that, right?
Okay, so here's my point.
And Kurtz turned out to be wrong.
He was wrong.
Collins
right.
had at least mentioned it, but and that was one of Kurtz's sins. But anyway, right. you're saying something else. What are you
yes,
saying?
Yes, I am. I'm saying that there was a basis having to do with that engagement for attacking Jason Collins. If you decide you want to do that, in the week where Jason Collins is being heroized and oh, what a mm-hmm. great man, and everyone wants to say good about him, you have something you want to say bad, you better say it right. Don't
yeah.
get the facts wrong. So the right. facts that he got wrong were just something that was in the actual article that he was referring to. It was in Sports Illustrated. He misstated the fact. He said it wasn't mentioned at all. Now, the fact was that it was mentioned in a kind of an offhanded way in which you didn't get the full sense of he did this when he was whatever age he was and over a period of 8 years. That sounds a lot worse. And I think there's a basis for criticizing Collins for deceiving the woman to the extent that he did. She apparently...
I'm not aware of the deception of the woman. What did Collins do to the woman?
He was engaged to her for 8 years and she went
on... Oh, and didn't tell her that he had a gay life?
Apparently, believing her. She went on and did interviews and said she was completely taken by surprise. I don't know if she's lying. Was she lying? Maybe she was.
I see.
I don't know. But if to the extent that he did that, he should have at least gotten her. I don't know why she went on TV and said that, because even if he did lie to her, I think he should have gotten his made peace with her and gotten her to agree not to go public and criticize him so that
ideally.
That didn't step on his announcement. But she did go on TV, and I think that criticizing someone who stays in the closet, this is what I blocked, especially in this day and age. You're talking about someone who graduated from Stanford in, 2001, who roomed with Joe Kennedy, who was friends with Chelsea Clinton. He went to Stanford. This isn't someone who came from some traditional background. This is someone who was in the kind of elite educational sphere, political sphere. He did not have enough reason to feel all inward, and I must stay in the closet.
The world of athletics is really a pretty hostile environment for a gay person.
Oh, but his career is basically over, and he's not a major star. I mean, he's setting himself up for some later.
What is the status of his career, by the way? Is he still playing?
He's a free agent. He think he only played a few games a season, averaged like 1 point a game. He was not a major player. It's not like Tiger Woods came out as gay or something.
Right.
Somebody famous.
I think we don't have to worry about.
So, yes. I mean, he really was, I think he was leveraging his career. He went to Stanford. I picture him going into politics. He knows the Clintons. I mean, he's well-connected. And so as someone who, this poor man who stayed in the closet, I'm just not that sympathetic to that, especially since he apparently, if we're to believe her, deceived this woman, made her waste 8 of the best years of her life, pinning her hopes on a guy that was apparently attractive.
But is that worse than a man just concealing a series of heterosexual affairs? In other words, is that worse than what Tiger Woods did?
People who are having heterosexual affairs don't go on TV and say, I am an adulterer. Aren't I?
Well, sometimes they're forced into it. Tiger Woods had to fess up.
Yeah, but they don't present themselves as heroes. They don't get calls from the President of the United States saying, what a brave man you are to admit that you are an adulterer.
Actually, Woods wound up playing golf with Obama, which, don't get me started. I'm going to sound like an old conservative person, but I don't really think Obama should glorify Woods by playing golf with him personally. But anyway. That's another story.
I just think that this person, Jason Collins, did not really have that much to lose. If the woman isn't telling the truth, apparently deceive her over a long period of time. And he's at the end of his career. He's probably not going to be signed, or maybe he will be signed just as a publicity thing. But I think he's leveraging himself forward politically. He's friends with the Clintons. He knows the right people. He went to Stanford. I don't see him hurting himself that much. So if you say, professional supports, first of all, there's this big slur on professional sports. I don't know if the evidence is really there. How homophobic are these people, really? But if you want to say it's brave to come out in that milieu, you should be someone with a more active, viable career. Or I'm just not. It's too much in the zone of a political stunt to me. I think they overplayed what a hero he was. But Howard Kurtz was a fool to go on the attack against the hero of the week and not get his facts straight, especially since he's the critic about criticizing journalism for not getting their facts straight. That was just a total screw up.
When you look at the whole list of particulars, the crimes that Kurtz is accused of, I mean, I don't know the back. There was like about three or four that everyone was listing, wrote Leah, including the people who interrogated him on his own show. And one or two of them sounded pretty dubious. I'd want to hear, like, how did you screw up this badly? On the other hand, it was like over 3 years or something, and the guy generates tons of stories. I still think basically this was like Tina Brown taking an opportune moment to dump the guy. And people cooperated with her, basically.
Didn't he leave the Washington Post to get on her vehicle because it was opportune for him?
A number of people left their perches to make big bucks from Tina at the Daily Beast, and she's since found a way to get rid of a number of them. And I think that's largely what's happening here. Not that he didn't make mistakes, but
what's wrong with what Tina did? I call her Tina. What's wrong with what Tina Brown did? I don't see what's so bad about that. It's a business, and she is.
I just think it's a little disingenuous. I mean, I think we're gonna look. Maybe I'm wrong. First of all, okay. So this is all. Although I finally saw somebody else speculating to the same effect on the web. Maybe I'm wrong, and this wasn't basically an opportunistic firing. But if you're asking me what's wrong if it is an opportunistic firing, I just think people should be honest, you know? Here's what's wrong. The contract, as I understand it, would have called for her to give him a big payout if she fired him without cause. And so I'm saying, if indeed his rate of error is actually about average for a journalist, that's not legitimate cause for firing, and she should pay him the whole back end of the contract, okay? That's, I guess, what I would say.
So do you think that the standard is higher when your beat is journalistic?
Media coverage? It's a good question. I don't know.
And kind of like ruins the whole thing.
I'm not a fan. I'm truly not a big Kurtz fan. And but you want to hear a not Kurtz fan, we should get Mickey on this case.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should bring Mickey on more.
Yeah, I know. Well, Mickey's, I'd be happy to have Mickey. Mickey's not, you know, eager.
Why? Why don't, I think the Blogging Heads audience would like to know why don't we get more Mickey?
Direct your tweets to Mickey on that question.
Well, I'm giving you the, I'm doing it right now. Mickey, we miss
you. Tweeting Mickey?
I'm Blogging Heads-ing Mickey.
Well, Mickey won't watch this. He's above this.
He won't watch Blogging Heads?
I mean, he probably won't wind up watching this particular segment. With all due respect, Anne, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe he will.
Okay.
But you want his attention, tweet him.
He loathes me, so maybe I should just...
No, he doesn't loathe you.
Oh, okay.
Did I say that?
No, I was reading between the lines.
No, I think
Mickey
would like
you.
You
said he won't watch
you.
This particular segment. Why don't you put a little link
I think your
thing
Mickey's
up
kind
there
of,
saying Anne sends out the bat signal to Mickey Counts.
Why don't you personally invite him to come on and do a dialogue with you about Howie Kurtz?
Oh, you think he would do a dialogue with
me? Be sure and mention immigration.
I always feel like you two are such a great pair. You, like, set up what Blogging Heads was, in my view. And you and Mickey, those are the best Blogging Heads. Those are classic.
We set the standard.
I love those old ones. Sets the standard. So I always
it's
feel
like
that
I love
if he
Lucy.
Would ever come back, he would be with you. But if he wants to go on with me, I'd love to go on with Mickey. I went on with Mickey's brother one time. Remember that?
Yes. Huh. Who looks alarmingly like Mickey.
Yeah, isn't it weird? I saw a picture recently of President Kennedy's sister, Eunice.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks so much like Kennedy in drag, I found it funny.
They all look alike, man.
If you look at them closely enough and you see the other person in them, it is freaky. There's something freaky
it's creepy.
About that, yeah.
So, so Cleveland, we were going to talk about this crazy abduction thing.
Lord. And we were going to talk about the Benghazi hearings that are going on today, too.
Benghazi, maybe we should jump to that, because I don't know what to say about Cleveland, except how the hell did he conceal that? That's just stunning.
I think that there's an issue. When you want to talk about gun control and the things that should be done about violence, I think looking at the way the police deal with violence in the cities and the way we don't publicize the things that go on in the cities... The fact is that those girls were in the neighborhood. There were frequent calls. There were at least 4 calls to the police, including one reporting a woman with a baby banging on the window, and the police didn't come out. A woman crawling around in the backyard naked on a leash, and the police didn't figure out that they needed... Why didn't they figure out they needed to look in that house? In 10 years, with those girls, 3 girls disappearing... I think the failure of the police.
I mean,
this is like Benghazi.
This is like Benghazi because it's kind of, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking, and I'm always a little reluctant to do that. I mean, who knows what actual data was presented to the police and how easy the dots would have been to connect. I mean, it could be there's a genuine kind of scandal here, but you know, I mean, being a cop, you're just nonstop called to put out little fires, and I don't think you go around thinking, hey, maybe this is the solution to some story I read about 7 years ago, you know? I mean...
And did you read the 9-11, you know, the 911 transcript when the girl finally got out and called and the way the dispatcher said things like, well, we'll send someone over when there's a free car and basically was just not treating it as a serious situation at all. So
You mean, I didn't hear that part of the 911 call. You mean the one where she said, the girl said, I'm so-and-so, I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm free now?
And the dispatcher was like, okay, you can tell your story to the police when they get there, and we'll send someone over when there's a free car.
I didn't hear that part.
Yeah. Well, it was a very, matter of fact, as if, you know, these calls about problems in the neighborhoods are just, kind of mundane and... Not important.
Okay. So, anyway, speaking of, we're close to an hour, speaking of Monday morning quarterbacking, Benghazi. Two dialogues ago, we had this big argument about Benghazi, where you were saying you thought Obama had basically chosen to let the ambassador die because there was something.
No, I never said that, Bob. I didn't say that.
Anne?
It was
Anne? And
I just watched
it
again
videotape.
Yesterday. No, I did not.
It's on video. No, no, no. I'll tell you. I mean, you accepted.
You kept saying that. You kept trying to put words in my mouth.
Yeah, and you said yes. And you said yes. I said, are you saying this? And you said, yeah. Yeah, you said, well, he would say
Bob,
it in a less fancy way or something.
Look, I think it's a little unethical to chatter out a whole lot of statements and yell at me to agree with them. And then finally, at some point, I say yes to something, but I'm very specifically never saying it. Mm. And at a later point, also clarifying that I wasn't talking about that I was talking about some other things. And I just think it's not right to act like you have me on record saying that. I just think
we'll let people watch. We'll give people the links. Let them watch. There's actually a couple. They have to watch a while because it comes up in, I think, two different places. But
Look, this is not about accusations that I make or what I thought was happening. What matters is that not enough attention was paid to it at the time, that the media was following along with a script that had to do with the re-election, and this came up so close to the election that there was a lot of alarm about it, and that we still don't know what really happened around, especially, you talked a lot in that old dialogue about the fog of war, and maybe they could they rescue them, couldn't they rescue them, all of that stuff. I think the issue about that probably isn't going to go very far. I was watching a couple hours of the hearings this morning. I think the thing that we need to focus on and what we've never really gotten the answer to is what the Weekly Standard was talking about these talking points. And Greg Hicks and the people that were testifying today lay the foundation for this issue, which is that the reports that the people who were in Benghazi were giving at the time were always that it was a violent attack and that there were no protests and that there was nothing having to do with that video. And that explanation, which Susan Rice went on 5 Sunday talk shows to deliver to us pre-election, that was all about how there was a protest that had to do with this terrible video, and this was a spontaneous thing, and it wasn't a terrorist attack, when it was only a terrorist attack. I think that how did that story get made up? How did that happen? We saw how the talking points were edited, who was really involved in that. Why did they do that? And so there was definitely a lie in there. There was a cooked-up lie about the video. And the video maker is still in jail, apparently. But that was a very strange thing to do. I'd like to know what that was all about. So I would put to the side the whole issue of, could they have been rescued in time?
Yeah.
What could have been done? And you can look back in retrospect and say, I wish they had done differently then. And some people say the planes could, if the planes had just flown over, that the Libyans, who had so recently seen the power of the United States making their revolution by virtue of this kind of air support, if we'd have just flown over, it would have had an impact. That's one of the things that was testified about today. All of that I think will probably fall to the side. I don't think that much can be made out of that because there are disagreements about what could have been done and how long different things would have taken. But I just don't think that I think the focus needs to be on what happened with those talking points and that bizarre, cooked-up story about the video and the protest that didn't happen, and the reports from Benghazi. Hicks was very clear in talking about this. He was the top authority in Libya after Stevens died. That's the mystery, and that's what we have a right to know the answer to. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a different issue from the one we were arguing about last time,
we talked about that too, but.
Well, we may have, but it wasn't the heated argument. The because I don't know that I disagree with you here. I mean, I certainly would assume that the talking points Susan Rice was sent out with were heavily flavored by the fact that it was the run-up to an election. Mm-hmm. And I would certainly not rule out the possibility that, spin that may have crossed over into dishonesty was injected into the talking points. And that's bad if it happened, and that's politics. But that's totally different from saying that a conscious decision was made at the time of the crisis to leave the ambassador imperiled because intervention would have somehow complicated the re-election bid? Well, that's a totally different question.
I do have questions about that. I'm just saying I don't think those questions are going to go over. From what I saw this morning in the hearings, I don't think the Republicans are going to be able to get the kind of traction they need to make that argument. I don't think
that's going to happen. Because the data ain't
there. I think that there was a problem before the attack that the more security was sought and it was denied. I think that whatever's been made of that has already been made. I think that there are issues about... personally, I think that Obama wanted credit for killing bin Laden and for the Arab Spring and for, you know, kind of conquering terrorism with a new way of doing it from the air where our people are never put in danger. And therefore, he did not want anybody on the ground.
Well, if that's the case...
And did not want to acknowledge that it was a terrorist attack either. Wanted to say, these are you know, over-enthusiastic protestors who got out of hand.
That's about how it was characterized. But that's about how it was characterized afterwards. Although, of course, he did use the term terror or something immediately after. But but anyway, I don't. The post-event spin may have been totally dishonest, and there may have been incredible incompetence or bad judgment before and during the crisis. But that's all very different from saying that there was some kind of, you know, calculated decision to imperil our ambassador.
I think, first of all, you're throwing these extra words in there, like calculated, and I do have questions.
Go back and watch the video. We'll let people watch and judge for themselves, Anne, but that is totally not an overstatement.
They're probably not still watching even now, but
you
have a way of talking to me about issues like this, where you start saying a lot of things, rephrasing it, throwing in things like calculated and characterizations as if you're paraphrasing me and trying to get me to agree.
About calculation. You were absolutely talking about political calculation.
I don't know. Why are you so intent on, like, you got this sort of tech dog nailing down quality that I just wouldn't do?
Do you think I would have made a good lawyer?
You might have enjoyed being a lawyer. I don't enjoy that sort of a thing. I'm not really interested in, like, nailing down other people like that and in restating what they think, except in writing where I can clearly see what I'm saying and where I'm kind of putting myself at risk, too. I don't like to create just, like, a hot spoken word situation.
Is it too late?
The theory of blogging heads that people are supposed to be... reaching a common ground, not being
they're
so
supposed to be
pinning,
no
nail you to the wall.
No, they're supposed to be, first of all, honest. They're supposed to not do talking points.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like ideologues who just do talking points. Mm-hmm. I like people who are honestly trying to engage other people intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that they don't have an ideology. I just, you know, the difference between doing talking points and having an actual high level argument.
Yeah.
They should be civil in some sense, but I don't think I've been uncivil to you.
Restating, claiming that I've said things and paraphrasing things and then putting things in an extreme form, so as a bit of a straw man kind of a thing.
I hope some commenter will actually just do a transcript so that people can read the exchange we had. We'll link to the video and.
I don't see myself as an expert. I'm certainly on things I'm not an expert. I don't pretend. I'm certainly not an expert on military tactics.
Yeah.
I don't know that. And sometimes I'm talking about something that I read and how that then raises a question. And then if you want to try to force me to act like I'm verifying the statements that I read, that I'm just saying I'm concerned about that, I would like to know the answers to that. I don't like that kind of a conversation where it's all about, well, you can't really say those things. And how can you support those statements? This is something I've read. I'd like to know what really happened. And if you say, well, why could that possibly, and I think this is the nature of what you said in that earlier dialogue, is how could that possibly have happened? Why would they do that? And so then that's challenging me to come up with a theory why anyone would do X. At that point, I say how X could be something that a person would do. And then you get into, like, that's my theory, that's what I'm saying is true. I think that that's an inappropriate tactic.
I hope we've gotten a number of people in the mood to go watch that video. Because I think I'm, like, totally okay. In my depiction of what you said. And we visited the issue a couple of times and it's not like you.
I'll bet
you
people
had
are sick
plenty,
of this
you had plenty
argument,
of opportunities to say, no, that's not quite what I'm saying. Because I repeated several times my paraphrasal of what you were saying.
Your style, especially on certain issues, and especially with me, is different from mine. So I'm
true.
Not going to fight with you the way you want to fight with me.
Oh,
and
please.
You want to insist that you won the fight, but I really don't want to fight that way. I'm not really, it's not my style.
Oh, man. Well, who do I fight with?
An amusing
battle. I'm running out of people to fight with, Ian.
Yeah, but I don't like to fight over that. The fact is, you know, people died. It's really serious. And I'd like to know the truth. I'm not about winning my own personal arguments. Or if I said X back last October, I want to be right and I want you to be wrong. I don't think that's what really matters here. Right? I mean, you know that's not what matters here.
No, I'm not saying it does. But look, I mean, I thought you wanted to revisit this. You wanted to talk about Benghazi. You're paying attention to this. I'm actually not. And
Well, the hearing started today, this new stuff with Greg Hicks and with the emails that came out about rewriting the talking points. That's happened in the last few days. So that's pretty important.
Yeah.
And we did have a discussion about it before. So,
okay.
But I would like to have a different kind of discussion. I would really like to know what happened. And if the politicians lie to us and the media facilitates that, I want to be able to break through that and not just be a subject of propaganda. I think people believe too much propaganda, like the way they believe there's all this gun violence when the gun violence has been cut in half. I mean, we're just softened and manipulated, and we're just patsies and dupes for all of this. And I don't know why you're so enthusiastic about this decline critical thinking and resistance to propaganda.
Wait, you're saying, wait. Talk about mischaracterization. You're saying I'm enthusiastic about a decline in critical thinking?
I think you want to not open up these subjects. And because they interfere with your favorite politicians and policies that you want, I think you... I'm just not interested in doing that. I just want to know what's true, and I want to resist propaganda.
Right. But when I say,
wait,
Ian, here's what's implausible about your theory. Why would they do X? Why would they want the ambassador in peril? Blah blah blah. You say that that's an inappropriate response in some sense because it's not your style. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what I do when I flesh out somebody's assertion.
I
say, how the hell does this make sense? Explain to me how this makes sense.
But if you're
going to find that offensive, then don't say this stuff in the first place.
Because
that's how I'm going to respond.
But here's the thing. If I say, I read X in the newspaper, and I want to know if X is true, and your response is, but why would anyone do X? It doesn't make any sense at all. And then I say, well, here's a way it could make sense, as if, you know, I'm writing a fictional script in which a character has to do X and I have to make it seem sensible. And I have a kind of an imaginative challenge. Why would, let's say you actually knew for a fact that X happened, then you know somebody did it. Why would they do it? So you have to think, maybe they're just completely crazy. But what if you knew a sane person and you knew his goals, like getting reelected president, did X, why would they do it? So I feel like the challenge was explain a way in which it could have been thought that doing X was a good idea. And facing that challenge, I could come up with an explanation of that. Now, that's not me accusing the person of doing it that way. That's just me responding to you
saying there's no rational way
that they would have done X.
I think you were much less remote from this theory than you're making it sound like, but we'll let people go back and watch the videotape.
You know what? I listened to it yesterday, and if what I'm saying now is not a proper characterization of it, I want to say that in the heat of the discussion, that's what I felt I was doing. If you can point to some statements where I unwisely said yes to one of your characterization.
It wasn't just that. It was when you said what you believed, and I'm pretty sure you put it that way.
It was a hypothesis. It's something that I'm afraid of, or something that might explain the facts as they had been reported up until then. It's a way of, you know, connecting the dots. And so it's a show me. I mean, for example, even now, why did they rewrite the talking points and make it about the video? We know that that was done. So,
well, we don't have an argument about the talking points.
All right, but I'm not
defending anything they did there.
All right, so but there's an example of something that we know happened. We've seen the emails. We know what was really the situation on the ground. We know that stuff was untrue. So I have my working theory of how I would explain that, and I would like Obama or the Democrats or Hillary or whoever to come forward and give a more plausible explanation of what happened.
That would be great.
I think it was political. I think they were covering their ass. And
could be.
And I think that they are still motivated to cover their ass. And if there's another, politically, and I think if there's another explanation, there's nothing out there that they need to come forward with an alternate explanation.
And there's probably some political motivation on the other side as well, but whatever.
I know there were, well, I would say, from what I watched the hearings, I think the Republicans are trying to use this, and I don't think that they're, you know, Darrell Issa's committee, I don't think they're doing a great job of mobilizing the material. I don't think they particularly know what to do with it. And some of the members of the committee are asking questions in a way that's this kind of political grandstanding, which the Democrats are also doing. So then I think the Republicans should have just really got their act together and decided we're going to be all about bringing out the truth. And the Democrats will say it's political. Let them be political, but we will act like we're the neutral ones. But they didn't have their act together. They're not doing that today.
Okay.
You know, maybe ISA is, but some of the other characters on that committee are not able to play that game. So it is political.
We are close to setting a record for longest blogging head, so that will have to be the last word. And on I think on most of that we agree, and on the rest people can consult the historical record.
Okay.
But thank you, and I particularly enjoyed the part where I got to interview you about yourself. We'll have to do more of that.
I stopped you from continuing down that road, though, didn't I?
I noticed that, and that's why I said we'll have to resume that.
Okay.
I will not be deterred.
Okay. Okay, but bring back Mickey, too. We would love that.
Hey, tweet him. Get him, you know.
Okay. Okay.
Grassroots movement. Okay. Thanks, Anne.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
See you.